Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast, where Polar interviews people so you can do more investing and less gambling.
Hello, everyone. It is Polar here from Seasonal Tokens. Welcome on another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast. And today we have another special guest. We have Rick, who is a jazz musician, philanthropist, but also a crypto enthusiast. And in this episode, which is the first part of my call with him, we're going to discuss the future of fiat money, CBDCs, bank crises, and a lot more. So if you want to be updated about the current crypto and world situation and how it can affect crypto prices and probably your investment decisions, you should definitely listen to this part one of my conversation with Rick. So enjoy. Okay. So thank you very much again, Rick, for accepting my invitation.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things that I want to discuss with you. And I think you're the first philanthropist that is a guest on my show. So I'm sure it will be really, really valuable episode. So before I start with my, let's say, not so common and standard question, can you introduce yourself and your background with a few words?
Sure. My name is Rick Delarada, and I'm the founder of Jazz for Peace. And basically, I'm a musical artist who got involved in, you know, studying the markets and following them and investing and all of that kind of thing as a hobby, and ended up developing it and incorporating the things that I learned in a philanthropic and entrepreneurial way to try to help make our world a better place using the art form of jazz with a fundraising model that we call the Empowerment Tree. Through this whole journey, I've been involved with, you know, very intelligent people. Actually, an interesting name that comes to mind today, Stefan Molyneux. I don't know if you know that guy, but I was trying to remember his name because he had been kind of vanished. I haven't seen him in such a long time, but he was a person who originally on a YouTube video or something talked about the importance of the blockchain and did a huge video about the validity of the blockchain. And that inspired me to, you know, really, you know, research what the advantages are for that new technology. And of course, cryptocurrency being a major part of it.
Okay. But you are a great jazz musician, and I don't have any doubts about it. But at the same time, you're doing some great stuff with crypto, which we are going to discuss later on. But my question for you is, what has actually attracted you to crypto? Why you haven't stayed in jazz, just going around the world and doing concerts?
Well, I'll tell you, it's after learning about the blockchain and cryptocurrencies, and I was studying investing in general, and I noticed that people were using the same kind of chart patterns, the same kind of things that we had learned, you know, whether it was trend lines or chart patterns or all kinds of things like that, to evaluate cryptocurrencies as well. So I started to, you know, see that you could incorporate cryptocurrency into, you know, the same investment techniques. And that led me to, you know, be able to study it and to follow it. It also became a fascination with me, you know, the whole idea of what's happening with fiat money, where it comes from, its lifespan, and the way that people were using cryptocurrency to, look into the future of where money and currency and those kinds of things might be headed as we move into a more modern era where fiat currency is, under a limited lifespan going forward. As you see in some countries already, their own fiat currency has been destroyed.
So you believe that the end of fiat money is coming, or crypto is going to live together with fiat money? How do you see the future?
Well, you know, it's interesting if you look at some, there's, I don't know if you've ever heard of Harry Dent, but he's one of those people that's, well-known, you know, been studying the markets for years. And if you talk to a guy like Harry Dent, by the way, we talked off camera, I had been involved in, you know, a prediction I had that real estate was in trouble back in 2005, based on all of the, you know, things that I saw. And that led me into a situation where I was shorting real estate, leading me to meet a lot of people who didn't think I was crazy, who were extremely smart. I was starting to realize that the general populace, if you're onto a good idea, the regular Joe thinks you're crazy. And then the really smart guy will come out of the woodwork and say, hey, wait a minute, you're onto something here. So I started to learn about all these different names. And, you know, just Harry Dent, as we bring it up, he looks at cryptocurrency very similar to the NASDAQ in 2000. And people who are familiar with what happened to the NASDAQ, it went into like kind of a climax run where they went up kind of like crazy, and all kinds of crazy, you know, dream companies that really made no sense got all kinds of financing, their stock prices went up, and then there was a major crash, and out of the rubble came, you know, the Amazons and Netflix and these other companies that were going to be long-term survivors. Harry Dent believes the same is true with cryptocurrency. And, you know, like I said, he is a pretty intelligent guy, has long, you know, history of studying markets. And I think that is one possibility where there could be a major shakeout with cryptocurrencies, even though we have seen a lot of them go down, you know, 80, 90% and then rise. I mean, some of the movements are spectacular, but where you do have some of them simply going to zero because they don't, you know, they don't stack up to the ones that have longevity. And then you might see a situation very similar to the NASDAQ where a handful or a dozen or a few of them rise out of the rubble.
Okay, so does this mean that there will be no fiat in your perspective?
Well, I think you could see a possibility of a changing fiat world due to a couple of things. One is the blockchain in general, which offers you interesting technological advantages. You already see governments now trying to move into what they call it a CBD. I hate to say CBD because that's cannabis, but what, you know what it's called? What's it called? It has four letters, right?
CBDC.
CBDC, right. and you see them doing that, you know, trying to go in that direction. I think there are some concerns about that. There are concerns about privacy. I mean, what's really strange is that the whole blockchain, what attracts is most of the people I know, probably you're one of them, what attracted the people to it was the respect for privacy and autonomy and people being able to, you know, do things without all of this, you know, without everybody knowing what they're doing and all that kind of control, you know what I mean? But when the governments do it, it looks like the complete opposite. It looks like a situation where you have no autonomy, you have no privacy, and they're controlling every single aspect of it. Am I correct in that assumption? I mean, that's the way it's kind of looking. That's a little bit scary.
Yeah, because it is. Okay. Actually, yeah. We know what's happening in China right now. Mm. Their social point system or whatever it is called. Like
exactly.
And guess who is the first one that is implementing CBDCs, right? It's China. Actually, I don't know if I've heard the news, but there is a city in China that is going to pay its citizens, employees in CBDC, actually.
Wow, wow.
So it has started and China will lead. And there is no doubt that this is the best country in the world that should start with CBDC because we know what's happening in China. So it makes total sense of what you're saying. And do you think that actually these bank failures are somehow the signs that we are going in the direction of of a change, of something new.
Here is something fascinating about bank failures that you're probably only going to hear from me, but I have to tell you something. I think it was back, it could have been as far back as 2012 or 13, but if you look it up on Google or whatever, you could look up, it's called the Taxi Medallion Boom Bust, Overnight Boom Bust Cycle, Fractal, okay? And what happened, this is fascinating, and I noticed it, and because I had all this experience with, the studying the charts and learning from all of these people, some of whose names I have mentioned. There's a lot of other ones. I took notice of a situation where taxi medallions, to drive a taxi in New York City, you had to have one of these little medallions. And because there was a limited amount of taxis and a limited amount of space in New York City, it was an island and all these things, the medallion started to go up in value on kind of a... they call it kind of a climax run where it just goes up every day for almost no reason at all, higher and higher, breaks all previous records. And a kind of a stupid taxi medallion, what some people would look at it as, that was worth maybe $50,000 or something like that when I came to New York City back in the 90s, was now worth over $1 million in the early 2000s for one little stinking taxi medallion. All of a sudden now, overnight, Michael Bloomberg was the mayor. Some people say he had a spat, he didn't get along very well with the guy, with the taxi companies, the head of the whole taxi operation. They were enemies. I don't know. But in overnight now, he basically opened the floodgates for Uber and Lyft and these companies that, as you know, do the same service as Uber. There's another one called Via. He let like four or five of them just run into, come into New York City. And overnight, the taxi medallion went from over $1 million and going even higher to absolutely no price discovery at all. So it's a overnight boom bust cycle. So I looked at that, and there's another thing that I look at that's called exponential function, and I think you know what that means, right? They say you put a drop of water in a stadium, and you exponentially, you add exponentially, so you're doubling it. Now you're going from two drops of water to four drops of water to six drops of water. All of a sudden, the stadium will go from like a quarter full to half full to completely full, So it goes exponential. And when you put those two things together, you have something that I'm very concerned about. And I noticed it that day, and I just put it in the back of my mind. I said, no one's going to listen to me, but I'm worried about this happening again. Because sometimes things don't just happen anomalously and then never happen again. You don't really see that. When you see something strange, what I do is I kind of consider the possibility of a change in dynamics, a pattern, a change in a pattern, and something that could have a function, such as an exponential function. And now we are seeing something called an overnight boom bust fractal with an exponential function. And you see it in all kinds of things. And if you look at the banks, okay, what you saw was this thing happening, and then there would be a span of time before it happened again, then there'd be a shorter span and a shorter span. And, we can go to FTX, right, where all of a sudden you saw. Now, isn't FTX, that's exactly like what happened with the medallions. Am I right?
Yeah.
Right? It just went crazy high. I mean, people were looking at FTX like, what the heck? I mean, look what they were doing, right? They had gone from, a token now that we realize is basically a printed token with no backing whatsoever, right? They had gone from that to literally they were like on the verge of like almost trying to take over the world. They had every football player signed up. They had all these people. Their messaging was just off the charts, just bizarre propaganda messaging, right? With renaming stadiums in the United, the whole stadium renamed after this wacky criminal. They become a bank, right? And look what happened. They went way, way, way up with the Super Bowl and everything. And when they dropped, look how fast it was overnight. So now I saw that. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, here we go. is get ready for exponential, you know, boom. So guess what you're seeing now? You're seeing them blowing up on a daily basis. Am I right?
Mm.
Yeah, so it's kind of gone exponential. What?
Or at least on a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis, absolutely, I will agree. But I do see, I think, watch it get a little, watch it speed up even faster. I think you could see in an exponential function, I think, don't be surprised if you see 40 banks blow up in a day at some point before this thing plays out. Yes. It looks to me like it's the boom bust, overnight boom bust, fractal repeating itself in an exponential function, meaning that now you can say why and all that, but the fact is a lot of people, when I was studying investing, they'll look at a chart and they don't even ask questions. They will invest related to that chart function, and then they'll let the news explain why it is, you know. But if you want to get into the why, of course people can say, hey, all of a sudden you raised interest rates and you caught all these people off guard and they're all blowing up. Because you have two things happening at once. One, you have interest rates raising, whereas all these banks, in order to preserve their capital, they were buying those bonds. You know what I'm saying? The treasuries, right?
Yeah.
Treasury bonds. So you buy a treasury bond at 1% interest thinking you're doing great because everyone else is at zero. Okay, you're at 1%, you think you're doing well, but you're also at the same time, and this is an interesting thing, most people thought that we can't raise interest rates because of the national debt. How are you going to repay the interest on the debt if you're raising interest rates? You see what I mean? So these people, you know, it wasn't completely crazy of them to think that we were in a bind where we couldn't raise interest rates. Nevertheless, interest rates are going off the charts, as you know, going up fast. And those treasury bonds, to sell them, that a tremendous loss to sell them. Okay. So what happens when there's a bank run is the bank is forced to sell the treasuries to cover the deposits, and they blow up overnight. You see how fast it is? Boom, just two things happen. You know, give us our money back. And okay, then we'll have to sell the treasury. As soon as they take that loss, now they have all these losses from the bad investment in the treasury to get the capital to give it to you back, and poof, they are completely out of bullets.
Yeah, exactly. I think that I read somewhere that most of the banks are actually doing exactly this, buying these treasuries, and then because of these percentages, now they're actually in loss and they have to wait for a better time to be able to sell them, at least.
If they can wait for a better time, that's exactly the problem. See, and here's the thing, fear. I mean, one of the early things I learned, and this is why markets go down so fast in general, you know. So, you know, short selling is very risky. You can also get your head chopped off overnight. And I could tell you some crazy stories of things that happen when they change the rules and things like that, that happened in the middle of the crisis that I was involved in with 2008, 2007. I mean, crazy things that they did to try to keep the status quo and keep everything from blowing up. They changed the rules, causing short squeezes and things like that. But, in this instance, you can't hold on to those treasuries if people out of fear have decided that your bank might be vulnerable. And that's all they have to think. It might be vulnerable. So they get their money out of your bank. That blows up your bank right there. Just the fact that they, just the thought, you see what I'm saying? Just the thought that maybe you won't survive is enough to blow you up right there. So it's incredible how much sentiment plays into it. That goes, I don't know if you are familiar with Elliott Wave.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so that brings up Robert Prechter, right?
Mm.
He was a big person who said that markets had more to do with sentiment than anything. And when there's a change in sentiment, and so what you're looking at here, Poe, is a bunch of people who have an instant change in sentiment. So they're like, wait a minute now, you know, these guys are holding treasuries, the interest rates are up. Maybe that, just maybe. So just their sentiment just switches to maybe. It's not even a for sure, just a maybe. And the bank blows up instantly from just that maybe, because they get their money out.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because while we are talking, I don't know why, but this idea came to my mind. Don't you think that it's somehow possible that these biggest banks like JP Morgan, for example, Goldman Sachs and so on, they are the main players that are posting these rumors and seeding this fear in people so they can go and get their money out of the bank so they can then go, I mean the big players, go and buy these banks, and then we have an amazing monopoly.
Well, that's the big, big picture, how this is playing out, right? Now, here's the weird thing. How are interest rates able to go up and go up so quickly without playing by the rules of the debt that has to be serviced? So, you know, on the one hand, we wonder how you're even pulling this off, you know, to service the debt at higher interest rates going up this dramatically and this quick. But secondly, yes, it is an incredible way to consolidate. Okay, so now let's look at the monopoly. That is another phenomenon that has been in a long multi-decade cycle, and that is the promotion of monopolies in general, okay? And you can go back to these techniques that people do to create monopolies, and you see this happening for decades and decades. Actually, a good one to start is Bill Gates.
Sorry for the interruption. This is Alvin, the audio editor for the Seasonal Tokens podcast. The story Rick is about to tell about Gary Kildall is completely untrue. Gary Kildall died at 52 after visiting the Franklin Street Bar and Grill in Monterey, California. He died the next day of a brain aneurysm in the hospital. This story was widely reported by the New York Times, the Seattle Times, and the LA Times, as well as many other publications across the world. Back to the episode.
Okay. Now, you remember the story about how Windows was originally created by this other guy. I forgot his name.
I can't remember his name.
But you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Yeah, we can't remember it. We'd have to look at it. I might be able to get that name before we end. I can find the name. But anyway, this guy basically had invented Windows. And Bill Gates met with him and basically tried to buy Windows. His name was Gary Kildall, okay? I got that for you quick. So Gary Kildall invented Windows. Bill Gates met with him. He didn't show up to the meeting. Apparently he was flying his plane or whatever. This is the legend. And they went and copied Windows, made a bad copy of Windows, okay? But this is a technique now that was rinse and repeat over and over. You see it, and it's going to lead to what we're talking about here with the banks. So basically, this guy sues because, you know, you copied my program and blah, 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 and I invented it. The judge agrees, and this is where, you know, you wonder about our system, if it's, you know, if it's rigged, you know. Of course, people get elected now by saying the system is rigged because so many people believe it is. So he basically... The judge says, okay, I'm going to let you both compete in the marketplace. Well, Gary Kildall makes the mistake of thinking in his mind, I have a better product, so I have no problem competing with this, you know, pirated, bastardized version of Windows that Bill Gates has. This is going to be a slam dunk, right? Not realizing that Bill Gates is tied with IBM. His father worked for there. They have a deal going. They have money, and they can just take millions of dollars, put it into escrow as, you know, cost of doing business, and put Gary Kildall out of business by simply selling their inferior product at a loss until he goes out of business. And actually, in this case, he committed suicide.
I didn't know that, by the way.
Yeah, well, if you look it up, you'll see Gary Kildall died by suicide.
Wow.
So I hate to, you know, be a bearer of bad news, but I'm not saying anything that's not readily available. This is not a theory. It's not a theory. This is well-known fact that that's how Gary Kildall died. Anyway, you can imagine how anybody would feel being, you know, blown out of business that way. Well, this one technique was used by everybody. I mean, Amazon's been using it for years. If you come out with something like, I don't know, it's babies.com or pets.com, whatever it is, you have something, you're selling your product online, Amazon will take a whole bunch of money, put it into a little, you know, area as, you know, cost of doing business, and they'll sell a similar product to yours at a loss to them to put you out of business. Thereby, that's how, you know, giving them a monopoly. You see what I mean? Now, you can go before that to the cars, the automobile manufacturers, okay? And what did they do? Well, they weren't selling a lot of cars because, in all honesty, I'm not even sure that we needed cars on this planet the way we use them now. I'm not even sure that we did, because when cars originally came out, people thought of it as, okay, this is a luxury item. You buy this thing, and on Sundays, you can take your wife and kids out for a drive. You can, on the dirt road or whatever, you know, you can go out and just, it's a little fun thing to do. That's it. Well, the automobile companies, this has created a monopoly. They all got together and they bought the public transportation from the city of Los Angeles that was electric, eco-friendly, the greatest ever. Every 6 minutes, these little cars would come and pick you up and take you wherever you wanted to go. Nobody needed a car. They bought it and dismantled it single-handedly, just because they owned it from the city. And they dismantled and forced you to say, God damn it, I'm not waiting 48 minutes for my, I'm late to work, I'm going to get fired, I got to buy a car. After you buy that, now you can go with the roads and all that stuff. So these, how, this is how these things work. You can even go further back. I had one in my mind, but I'll think of it later. But anyway, you can go back and see how these people do this and how it's created. And these are little techniques that they know. And, you know, if you look at even with viruses, right, you can't sell virus software if there's no virus. Right. So I wondered that when all of this, everyone had to buy McAfee and these other viruses. Right. I mean, if there weren't any viruses, you can't buy virus software. So whose incentive is it to have viruses? The person selling the software. Right. So, you know, this is a possible way to create the need, you know, it could be up in the big picture, the CBDB or whatever you said it was, that could be part of this whole picture for all we know. Because as you see, this raising interest rates has caught every bank off guard. Every single bank is caught off guard, and it's all, the only option is to consolidate into the big banks, as you say, the JP Morgans and a few other ones. And not only that, but even in a bigger sense, you have to wonder, are we taking all of the world's, all of the country's money and forcing that into the US Treasury? If you want to look at an even bigger picture, right? If you want to look at it in a microcosm, we're forcing everyone to invest in the U.S. Treasury in order to protect the U.S.
Yeah.
So look at that. Look at it. You can look even bigger and you can see, wait a minute, we're all consolidating here, but it looks like we're consolidating into a few banks. But in all honesty, if you also notice, Poe, interest rates have gone up, but the banks haven't raised theirs like they're supposed to do and like they normally do. If you look at any other period, like the 1980s where interest rates were high, every time the interest rates went up, the banks raised their interest rates to the people holding the money. But now they're not. Now they're not doing that. Isn't that interesting? So you've got an interest rate that's high and the bank is still paying the same low interest rate. So guess what you have to do? If you want to get interest right now, you have to take the money on your bank account and you have to go on like Treasury Direct or something, and you have to open an account with the U.S. Treasury, and your money is really being held by the Treasury now in order for you to get an interest rate, not the banks. So JP Morgan is almost like a government entity, right? Collecting your money, of which you then will need to put it in U.S. Treasuries in order to get interest. So this is, you could trace this back to self-preservation of the US dollar, because things change in a very big way when the US dollar loses its status, which is slowly eroding, as you know, worldwide.